Now, there's different explanations. You know, some people say, well, you know, maybe these are just mental states and they're not really physical places. Yeah? Often people wonder that. Well, the animal realm is definitely a physical realm. I mean, we can see that. The one about hungry ghosts and spirits, again, it's quite interesting depending what culture you lived in. Because if you go to Asia, so many people have stories about spirits. Yeah, it's not a big thing for people in Asia to believe in spirits. You know, so many people have had experiences with spirits. Maybe here in the West we've had similar experiences, but we don't call it spirits. We label it something else or attribute its cause to something else. But there is some discussion whether these are actual physical places or not physical places. And some people say, well, they are actually physical places, let's say, like the Hungry Ghost place or the Hell Realm. You know, maybe they are physical places, and then, well, are they real or not real? Well, is this life real or not real? Yeah. So in one way you could say, well, maybe it's as real as this karmically created life too, because what we're perceiving this life is also a creation of our karma. And so maybe the environment is as real as the environment we're experiencing now. Other lamas say that, for example, the hell realm is purely karmically created. It's illusory. In other words, it's not a real physical place. You know? But it appears that way so strongly, so vibrantly, because of one's karma. Like when one has a hallucination, yeah? Or when you're dreaming, yeah? You're completely convinced this is reality. Yeah? So hallucinations, dreams, they're illusory. We experience them as real. But the point is, they're also due to our mental states, aren't they? They're dependent on the mind. So that's why Shantideva said there's nothing to fear in the three realms apart from the negative mind, because that's the thing that creates our environment and creates our whole perception of it. Okay, let me pause here and see how you're doing so far. Yeah. Oh, okay. Extremely hidden phenomena are extremely hidden because our minds are obscured. Not because something's covering the phenomena, but because the mirror is dirty and it can't reflect what's out there. Okay? So what is it that dirties the mirror? It's the what we call the diluted obscurations and the obscurations to knowing. So if we understand the emptiness of inherent existence, that cuts the ignorance, which then helps us to remove the deluded obscurations. As we meditate more and more on emptiness and on dependent arising, we're able to also clear away the subtle stains of the mind, the obscurations to knowing. And then it's like you have a completely clear mirror that just naturally reflects whatever it is that exists. So it's a... Yeah, well, the Buddha would be able to perceive the hell realms directly, you know, in the sense, not that he would be in the hell realms experiencing, you know, he or she would be in the hell realms experiencing pain, but would be able to perceive the existence of that as something that was created by sentient beings' karma. Mm-hmm. Are you talking specifically about spirits or hell realms or whatever it is? Okay. How to get out. Well, first of all, that's one reason why they say that getting the life that we have now, the precious human life, is like half of the battle. You know, the just to get this life is so fortunate that you know, compared to what it took us to get out of the lower realms to get here, you know, getting from here to Buddhahood is almost the same thing. Another way of looking at it, okay, let's say you have a human being who creates all different kinds of karmas, different actions, so the different seeds on their mind stream, okay? Now let's say when they die, their mind is really upset and angry because the hospital is charging them too much, okay? And they're all upset because they don't want their relatives to have to pay the hospital bill after they die. And so they die in that kind of mental state. A negative karmic imprint ripens. They get born in a lower realm. Okay? They stay in that lower realm only as long as the causal energy, that karmic energy, is there. So the lower realms are not permanent. They aren't eternal. In the same way that our present life ends when the karmic energy for it runs out. Any kind of rebirth within cyclic existence ends at some point. Because the causal energy, the karmic cause, you know, runs out. And yet that person still has, even though they're experiencing a lower rebirth, they still have on their mind streams the imprints from positive actions they did when they were a human being. So that's why, you know, very often if animals are dying, we say mantras on them. Okay, it puts a good imprint on their mind. If they have some good imprint already there, it can act as the fertilizer to make a good karmic imprint ripen at the time of their death. Okay? So, you know, people eventually will come out of the lower realms because they still have the good karmic imprints on the mind stream, and those can ripen later and give them a rebirth as, you know, a god or a demigod or as a human being. Okay. Similarly, you know, very often you'll see, like in the Tibetan community, everybody, you know, people go on the circumambulation around the different buildings and the monuments, and this is considered a very good thing to do. So they'll take their animals with them, too. Now, when I lived in Dharamsala, I used to go in the evenings and walk around the library, and there was one puppy, you know, that every evening she'd come with me. And she'd kind of walk around the stupa with me. And so I thought, I mean, compared to other dogs, at least this dog had the possibility to somehow contact, you know, this building with all, you know, these holy objects in it. That puppy somehow had the contact to contact people around who said lots of mantra to her also. Yeah. So it's possible to put good imprint on the animal's mind. So for those of you who have pets, yeah, say mantra to your dog, your cat. Lama Zopa, actually, he had a few of us nuns. I remember one year in the summer, every after dinner, we had to go sing prayers to his dog. Yeah? And then there was one nun who was in charge of taking care of the puppies, and she brought especially these two dogs. You know, they came. I think those dogs went to more initiations than I did. She was very concerned about good karmic imprint in their mind, even though they couldn't understand anything at all. Yeah. Okay, so when the mind gets really stuck in a relationship and can't let go. Well, one thing is to try and just look at that person more objectively and to recognize this is a person whose mind is obscured by disturbing attitudes and karma. You know, what is so remarkable about this person? If we look at their mind, they get angry, they get attached, their mind's uncontrolled. They're complete, you know, they're also controlled by their disturbing attitudes and their karma. And what's there to be attached to in a mind that can generate non-virtuous thoughts like that? And similarly, if we look at the person's body, what's there to be attached to? Because if we look at the inside of the body, it's pus and blood and guts and all sorts of different things there. So what possible thing could we gain from, you know, being attached to this person's body and mind? Because neither of them are particularly enlightening.
Negative thoughts about them,
does it work? Not in our usual way of thinking negative thoughts. Like often when we're really attached to somebody and the relationship goes bad, then we get angry. But we're angry and we're attached at the same time, you know. And so our mind is, we're picking faults, but it's simply because our feelings are hurt. This isn't like that. There's no sense to angrily picking faults at people. But it's rather just trying to understand the nature of other sentient beings. Yeah. And if we look, here's the sentient being who gets born and gets old and sick and dies. Now, how can we take refuge in somebody like that? Because they're under the same, you know, influences that we're under. Okay, if you'd rather approach it that way, I mean, of course you can say, you know, instead of the mind getting really stuck, and, oh, I want to be with that person, blah, 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 and saying that mantra, you know, if I want to be with them, why don't they love me? I want to be with them, why don't they love me? Switch it. Switch it into a mani padme hum, a mani padme hum, a mani padme hum. You know, switch your attention onto something more constructive, because you know the other thing is totally fruitless. Yeah. And just focus your mind on the mantra. Yeah. Yeah, it's basically in that order. At the time of death, first, if there are very powerful actions, they would ripen. In their absence, the habitual ones. And then kind of what's conditioned at the time of death. But I think just by the attitude, our attitude at the time of death is going to have a strong influence, I think, regardless. Because if you have a really negative mind at the time of death, it's very, even though you may have created a lot of positive karma, it's going to have a hard time growing. Now, some people kind of think, well, yeah, it's very easy to generate negative mental states. So, I mean, positive mental states. So I'll just live my life the way I want. And then at the time of death, I'll just think about the Buddha, and it'll all be okay because I can generate love and compassion when I die. Yeah, sounds good? Want to buy it? Difficulty is, you know, if we... There's a hitch here. The 900 number. If we have a really hard time generating constructive thoughts while we're alive and we have so many good, calm, nice conditions around us, what makes us think it's going to be so easy to do when we're dying and our bodily elements are all out of balance and our mind is experiencing this whole new situation? Isn't that a little bit arrogant to think that we can do at death time what, in a confusing situation, what we can't even do now when we sit on a nice, in a nice quiet room on our meditation cushion? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah, it is fair. We do die pretty much as we've lived. Now, it always is possible, and, you know, so we always do try. Let's say we're with somebody who doesn't know anything about the Dharma practice, we still try very much to encourage them in a positive state of mind. Okay? But, you know, that it would be much easier to do that if the person had created the cause for it, you know, good thoughts to arrive previously. Yeah, we do die as we've lived. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so what happens if there's a sudden death or somebody's in a coma before they die? Well, in a sudden death, I think there is still the opportunity for some flash of something going on, you know, like, you know, you see you're going to crash and your mind does have some thoughts. It does generate different things. Right? You can see even when you're startled, something happened and you jump, there's a thought there. There's something, there's a reaction. So, you know, there is something going on. Now, in the case of a coma, I'm not completely convinced that people are totally out of it. Because I've heard accounts, I've talked to people who have been in coma, and they remember being quite conscious in coma. It's just they could not communicate outward with everybody else. Okay? So I talked to one woman, and she just was aware, you know, it was like she wanted to talk and say something. And everybody was just standing around saying, oh, look at her, she's in coma. And yet, she did have some connection. So I think still, even then, you know, something does go in. Or even if the coma is so deep that they don't really have, they have just a very, very fuzzy awareness of what's going on outside, still, I think something does go in according to the environment. So we can influence people who are dying in coma, or if we're in coma ourselves, to try as much as possible to control the mind. Well, usually when people commit suicide, they aren't very happy. And an unhappy mind is very fertile ground for the ripening of negative karma. Also, although suicide isn't the complete action of killing, it is, you know, some form of taking life, although it's not the complete action. So just the act of suicide itself puts a negative tendency, plus that mental state is one in which a person is often quite tortured mentally, difficult to have a positive attitude. So that's why we usually say in Buddhism that, you know, suicide is a great tragedy. But somehow somebody's life still could be made meaningful if they could somehow find a way and a method to use, or if they could somehow pull themselves out of that hole that their mind got them stuck in, and just turn their mind to something else. We would say that's probably a function of delusion. Yeah, and you can see, you know, how considering suicide is the only honorable exit to save the family name, you could see how that is something completely created by the mind. Yeah, that belief is totally a creation of human society and the human mind. Totally created by our conception. So, yeah, it might seem in a particular culture like that's what you do to save the family name, but it would really be, I think from a Buddhist view, be considered a tragic action done out of ignorance. I can't remember, maybe, that the Buddha allowed an exception for arhats with terminal illness to commit suicide. So, become an arhat. You know, I mean, the reason arhats could do that kind of thing is because their mind is free from the cycle of rebirth, and because they don't have negative attitudes. Yeah, they wouldn't be doing it out of disturbing attitudes, and they wouldn't have the karma to throw them back into cyclic existence again. What's the Buddha's view? That's one that's really rather difficult to say. I mean, they usually say try and preserve life at all costs. But I remember when His Holiness has been asked about it, you know, like particularly regarding all the expense and everything that is involved, he, you know, really says this is a difficult decision to make. So it is a very difficult one. I don't think I can give a, you know, 100% clear answer. My own personal feeling is that if somebody is a Dharma practitioner, to try and create an environment whereby either they could have an extended life so that they can try and create more good karma, or to have a way of dying peacefully so that they could have clarity at the time of death, because to have clarity at death time is very important if one is a practitioner. If somebody isn't a practitioner, then, you know, if the life can be extended and if somebody says mantras and does something to put good imprint on their mind, that could be very, very beneficial for that person also. Now, for the person who's just going to be hooked up to the machine and in a coma and no prayers, no mantras, no nothing, that may just, you know, kind of put off the next rebirth, whatever that next rebirth is going to be. quite difficult. Especially when you get into the subject, well, you know, it costs how many, you know, thousands of dollars a day to keep somebody alive on a respirator, and couldn't the money be used to do something more for other sentient beings? Well, I think the real key to that is in terms of government policy or social policy, that rather than putting so much money in one direction and creating all that possibility, maybe better from the beginning to put it in the other direction and have better prenatal care and better education and schooling and things like that. Okay? Okay. Well, an indifferent mind, yeah, would be, I think it would be much better to die with an indifferent state of mind than, you know, let's say one full of attachment or anger. It's much better in that way. You know, you wouldn't have so much obstacle. But still, an indifferent mind can be very, very obscured. So it's hard to say exactly what kind of karma will grow in them. Cynicism, I think, is like, it's a form of anger and belligerence, and it's also a form of pride. Kind of a mixture of those two. That's a painful state of mind.